Today's episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
This episode of Unwell is brought to you by The Amelia Project. Have you ever daydreamed about disappearing and starting over? What if there was a company that provided just that service? Welcome to the comedy fiction podcast, The Amelia Project, a show about a secret death-faking agency. In each episode, you'll hear a new client being interviewed and the dilemmas that bring them to the death-faking agency. They're in turn funny, thought-provoking, or downright surreal. It's just such a delightful premise. We think you'll really enjoy it. You can find The Amelia Project wherever you listen to podcasts, and stick around for a trailer for The Amelia Project at the end of this episode.
Hi. I'm Yusuf Dahl, and when I was 18, I was convicted of selling drugs. For the past 3 years, I've had difficulty finding housing because it is legal in the United States to discriminate against individuals that have a past drug distribution conviction on their record for life. It doesn't matter if it was a hard drug like heroin or a drug that's now legal or partially legal in many states across the country, like marijuana. The Thurman Amendment was introduced to the Fair Housing Act in 1988 by segregationist Strom Thurmond, and it's since been used to deny housing to all people. But because people of color are disproportionately jailed for drug charges, we are affected more. My goal is to overturn this amendment to start an end to housing discrimination that unfairly targets people of color. If you would like to join this movement, please visit ThurmanAmendment.org to learn more.
A message from the Fable and Folly Network.
Hello, Jeffrey here. Now, while we were recording for season 5, we took a bit of time out to record some answers to some questions that you folks sent in. In this session, we had answers from Joshua K. Harris, Kat Hoyle, and Marsha Harmon. And we'll have some more answers to other questions you asked in a later episode. We hope you enjoy, and thanks for sticking with us while we prep season 5 of Unwell.
Hi, I'm Marsha, she, her, I play Dot.
Hi, I am Joshua K. Harris, you can call me Josh, he, him. I played Rudy.
Hi, I'm Kat Hoyle, they, them. I play Abby.
Mel Fox asks, what stands out the most in terms of the journey and growth of your characters?
I think in the end, what stands out to me the most about Rudy is that in the beginning, my concept of Rudy was, I think even in a video we put out very early on, I said something like, oh, Rudy is excited. And a lot of that, like, adventure and personality was there. And that's pretty much how I saw Rudy. But as time went by, we got to see a little more tenderness and vulnerability. And by the end, even some really dark, dark shades. And I was kind of on that ride along with the audience. Didn't see it coming, but it made so much sense in the end. And I was, you know, very happy to play it.
The thing I'm sort of struggling with answering this question, because I feel like so much of Dot's journey for me gets filled in season 5. And so I don't want to say too much, but I think it has been a process of like coloring in the broad outlines that we get early on. And like if there ever is a broad, like Dot is a broad, right? And she sort of starts off in this one particular way, and then as the series go on, I think we see more sides and more depth and more nuance. I mean, that might be nuance, maybe taking it a little far, but more shades, I guess. And I think some of the more standout things that happened in my understanding of Dot. Some of those happened in season five, or will happen in season five, will have happened in season five.
With Abby, the biggest thing for me that I've really enjoyed watching, or I guess uncovering throughout the series, has been their vulnerability and kind of learning more about their like inner life a little bit, because they're such a reserved character, and not like in the sense that they're kind of like stodgy, but like they don't let people in very easily or really at all. And the like moments where we get to see them be a little bit more vulnerable and kind of see what is going on inside their like mental space that maybe they don't want people to witness, like getting little glimpses of that and how that kind of comes together to create them as like a more complex character has been really, really lovely to like go on a journey of discovering.
Patty asks, what has been your favorite episode or scene to record?
I have an answer for this.
Go ahead.
The reason I asked if this was coming out before or after season five was released is because my favorite episode to record actually was in season five, but y'all don't get to hear about that, I guess. but my second favorite episode to record was probably when Abby, Nora, and Rudy go up to Sinclair Knob. It's just so lovely. It's really like great moment for the three of them to like be present with each other. And you know, it doesn't help that it's like right before something very sad happens. but it was just really delightful. And it was also just, you know, really delightful to be in the room with folks making that episode happen.
Can I actually tack something on to the end of that?
Yeah.
I actually love that episode too. It wasn't going to be my answer, but it kind of was making good on a promise I felt was made in the first season, where you had a lot of Rudy and Abby together. And I had the sense of, oh, great, there's going to be this arc where Rudy's going to win over Abby, and Abby's going to appreciate Rudy, and Rudy's going to have a better understanding of Abby. And then Rudy fucked off to the Delphic Order. Yeah. And it became a team best friends with Chester instead. And Abby had, you know, their own journey. But then when we got to that episode, it was finally the episode where we got as close as we could ever get with those characters to saying, you're my friend and I love you.
Mm-hmm.
And I had wanted that from the beginning. So it felt just especially nice.
Yeah, like it wasn't quite closure because the thing hadn't happened yet. But
did something happen after that?
All I remember is a sharp flash of light.
No. Right. But yeah, it was just really sweet and lovely, and I just really enjoyed that episode recording it.
I would just say for me that my favorite episodes to record are the ones where we're all in the room together. Like it's cool when we're not, you know, sometimes it happens that way, or we've got some people and not everybody, or we're doing kind of bits and pieces and we know each other well enough that's fine. I mean, you still hear their voices in your head, but to like actually be in the room is just, it's really fun.
Mm-hmm. Agreed. God damn it, what was the episode? I had two episodes from season three I was going to say something about, and oh, yes, I totally know what I was going to say. Okay, so, oh my gosh. My favorite thing, I think probably favorite episode to record was season three, and I don't remember the actual episode necessarily, but it's the episode where Rudy is actually brought down to the lower depths of the Delphic Order, and learns all these things, and it's just one of those things that, like, he fantasizes about secret societies and all of the trappings of it, and like, it's probably not like that, and he gets there, and oh my god, it's all true, and he gets so excited, like, yes, I would very much like to hear the music, and oh, are you going to read to me from that big book, and it got to be a chance to just be Rudy commenting and being gleeful as Chester and Hazel have the actual scene.
Alejandra asks, as someone who draws fan art for Unwell, I want to ask, how do you feel seeing people's visual interpretations of the characters you write for or voice?
I love it. I love it. I love it. I love it. I love it so much. I love it so much. I love how they rarely look like me, which is great. I get such a kick out of it. I love it when they look different from each other. You know, if there are multiple iterations of Dot and they're all a little different, that makes me so excited. And what I've noticed from, this was more true of Dr. Caligari back in the Our Fair City days, but like I had a picture in my head of what I thought she looked like. And as I was playing her, I was trying to sound like I thought the person who looked like that would sound like. And that's a little bit true of Dot, a little bit. But all of the fan art pictures of any of the characters I've played in the HeartLife NFP cinematic podcast universe, none of the fan art has ever looked like those pictures in my head. And I just find that really delightful.
Yeah, I want to say the same thing, really, is that's been the most striking thing. Obviously, it's an incredibly cool honor to like have anybody want to draw things that you were a voice for. But also, the really incredible thing about it to me was seeing the different interpretations of all our different characters. And I remember one or two of the Rudys, and there were a bunch that was so cool, looked kind of like what I had imagined. But there were several that looked way, way different than I thought, including, I think one was a black man with an entirely different outfit that I would have worn. And I think what I see in all of that, and maybe I'm wrong about what's going on in people's heads, is that the great thing about the medium with a good show is people listening get to take it and make it whatever is most meaningful to them. That you can picture Rudy and Abby and Dot and Lily in the way that it makes sense to you, that makes it meaningful to you. And it's really cool to see that about people when you see that art.
Yeah, I agree with that. It's really great. I love all the fan art. I don't know what Abby looks like, to be totally honest. So it's cool that somebody knows. It's like really exciting to see how people interpret the character visually based off of just the like audio cues. And that's really cool and exciting, and it's always really fun. And I'm like also excited that the show inspires people to like make art based off of their own interpretation and like the way that they see the show. Like that's really cool. And I love that from like a community perspective.
Catherine D asks, what was your least favorite episode or scene you had to write and or perform?
I do have an answer for that. I love that everybody's like, yes, let's talk about all the things I hate. So my favorite episode to record was relatively early on in season 3. My least favorite was the last episode Rudy appears in season 3. I want to say it's called The Sound of Her Voice, something like that. I think it's episode 10. And it's the episode where Rudy goes to have dinner at Chester's house. And it turns out Lily like invites herself along. And this is where basically Rudy's betrayal, if you want to call it that, comes to a head. And the very last thing is you get this scene between Rudy and Lily very briefly where Rudy just says, I don't know if I can make you trust me. I don't know if I can ever have that happen again, because she's so infuriated. And it really felt like Rudy had lost all of his friends. And it was the last thing I recorded in the season. And the thought of Clarissa or anyone else feeling that way about me is devastating. The same for the character. I mean, you're attached to your character, and the thought of Lily or Abby or Dot or anybody. I mean, Dot later reads Rudy the Riot Act. And that's hard as well. So those would be the things I would mention in terms of least favorite, just being your character going through those tough moments.
Kind of not an inverse of that, but like maybe a like parallel structure to that is I don't know if it's like a specific episode, but there are a lot of times where Abby is very mean and that's very hard because y'all are so great. So like maybe not like least favorite in the sense where I'm like, oh, this is a terrible episode, or this doesn't make any sense, or the writing's bad, because that's never the case, right? Like I like genuinely love every moment of this show, but there are some aspects of the show that were harder to do than others. So maybe like dislike in the sense of like it made me uncomfortable in the way that, like, you know, sometimes acting can do, like playing a character who is like fully fleshed out and like has conflict can do. So like especially moments where like Abby and Rudy were in conflict were really hard for me because it's like, like, you just want them to be friends again. Also, I was stressing every time Jess made me sing in the show. not because I don't like to sing, but because I get really anxious about it. But I got over it, and it was great, and it happened, and the show's recorded and done now, so we can't write any more Abby singing into the show, the end.
And it's true that Kat is dropping a new album in concert with the when season 5 drops. Mm-hmm. It's going to be a techno jazz country album.
Y'all, I'm so glad we didn't do a musical episode of this show.
The Fable and Folly Network supports creators of exceptional audio stories, including the one you're listening to right now. If you love our shows, we want to hear from you. Complete our listener survey at fableandfolly.com/survey. This will help us learn more about you, what you like, what you'd like to hear more of, and how we can maintain an inclusive, safe atmosphere. As a thank you for your participation, we have extras and behind-the-scenes content from your favorite shows. Fans make the network what it is. Thanks for listening, and we can't wait to hear from you. Find our listener survey at fableandfolly.com/survey today.
Two AO3 fanfic writers ask, what happens in the Mount Absalom book club?
Okay. So the Mount Absalom book club. It's been going on for years. Honestly, I think listeners will get a little, I can't really call it a preview, but like a window into the Mount Absalom book club, sort of, in the end of season 5. I won't say more than that. But I will say, I think, I don't think Dot ever read the book, but I think maybe 10 years ago she made a good faith effort to do that. But mostly it's the Mount Absalom wine club where Russell and Maureen talk about the book and Dot talks about what she read in the Cliff Notes, if she bothered to read the Cliff Notes. Partly because I think, you know, Dot has other things to do. And then maybe in the last few years, it can be harder to like remember plot points and character names. And so maybe she just kind of stopped reading. But mostly I think the Mount Absalom book club is about wine.
I cannot be the first person to have this thought. Mount Absalom book club has to be the next Unwell piece of merch, right? Something with that.
I don't know what goes on at the book club, but I do know that Abby has strong opinions on the books that they pick for it. Probably all negative.
Oh, yeah.
Oh my God, are you really reading Dan Brown?
Oh, they probably did read Da Vinci Code, but I don't think they read any. Like, I think they're like a one book per author. You know, sometimes like a big, like I'm sure they also read Eat, Pray, Love, or said they did.
Oh my God. I love this, that the Mount Absalom book club is the most basic book club.
I mean, I don't know. I'm trying to think who would bring like a more refined or original. Like,
I think that's perfect.
There's not like a Marisol of
no
novels in our world that we know of who's going to like find the perfect book I mean, to fit.
Unfortunately, it's Hazel.
Yeah, it would be Hazel.
No.
I bet Hazel likes some nasty fiction.
And she won't discuss
fiction.
It with you because... The first book she ever read that she enjoyed was Lady Chatterley's Lover.
Lady Chatterley's Lover is a weird book.
Never heard of that.
Oh, it was a classic dirty book.
Ugh. Yeah, yeah. It's like Victorian era erotica. But it's very explicit.
Yeah, and it's like a full on huntsman gardener
There's a new movie adaptation coming out.
Krista did an ad for
Dipsy.
Dipsy, yes. As Hazel. Okay, wait, never mind. I'm totally right.
Yeah, you're totally right. You're totally right.
Mm-hmm. We've talked about the special collection before.
Yes, on the special collection.
Yummy Kaku asks, what's your favorite thing about playing Rudy?
Honestly, I think my favorite thing about Rudy was, you know, initially, or even in general, I felt like Rudy and I had a great connection over just the enthusiasm and passion in general, the depth of that passion. The thing I'm envious about with Rudy, though, is Rudy also has an incredible depth of knowledge and motivation. Rudy lived such an adventurous life, making backdoor deals with a mayor to prevent the involvement of La Cosa Nostra and, you know, breaking into a bell tower to chart stars and who knows what else. There's so much about Rudy's life that literally no one knows, even in the world of the show, that I'm sure there are many journals that could be written of Rudy's adventures around the globe. But I really admire Rudy in that way. Rudy is in many ways what I wish I was in a certain way. I've got certain ingredients there, but Rudy is so much more. And I mean, honestly, it's probably the greatest honor of my life as an artist to have played Rudy and Walt and be involved in this show. Yeah.
Anyone else want to say what their favorite part of playing Rudy? No.
Just going to say, one of my favorite things about Rudy is that he merited his own question. You know, that he sparks that kind of joy and somebody who's forget what is everybody like about the character they play. I want to know about Rudy. Makes me happy.
Yummy Kaku, I paid them off. No. That's why there's a specific Rudy question.
I don't think that's true.
Thank you, Yummy Kaku.
Shelby asks, have any of the actors improvised lines? If so, what is one of your favorite improvised lines and why?
I honestly don't think you ever would have let us get away with improvised lines that actually made it into the show.
I think our writers are so good that usually if we don't say what's on the page, we want to go back and say what they wrote. Yeah. I can't think of any improvised lines that I've been witness to.
I mean, there's definitely been improvisations between actual takes or that ruin a take.
Sure.
Release the king cut.
Yeah.
But that's more blooper material, I guess.
Yeah.
Didn't Pat improvise some bureaucratic jargon to go on in the background of something?
Oh, the rules and regulations ASMR?
That was just in the gag reel.
That was just in the gag reel. I thought that, I for some reason, I thought that was
He started doing that and then I interrupted him, yes.
Yeah, that's okay. Pretty good.
I'll tell this story into the mic, but you guys have heard about Miles's improv.
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, yes.
And his flawless take.
Okay, so.
I think I got it.
Speaking of improvisation and Miles, I want every raw recording of Miles to be released. And isn't there even a specific episode or scene that Miles recorded all of?
Oh, yeah. He recorded every character. He just wanted to read all the lines.
We need those alternate episodes.
We need it. We do. We need the Miles cut.
I hate that Miles is clearly the best actor and most charismatic person in this cast.
Mm-hmm. And he's shorter than me. Just got everything.
That's all that matters.
He's got everything.
Mad asks, one of my favorite things about Unwell is the use and subverting of common horror, spooky tropes, while also not falling into common cop-outs from the genre. I love the creativity and fresh ideas that you've made. When creating the story of Unwell, how do you work with and around the genre constraints, and what is your relationship like with media that came before Unwell?
I don't want to speak for the writing team, but I don't think there's been any genre constraints. It's like, it seems like, I mean, it definitely leans towards a supernatural horror genre. And if you had to put it in a genre, it would be that. But I don't necessarily think the show ever feels like or has felt like, oh, we're setting out to write a supernatural horror audio drama. And so it has to like meet all these checkpoints. And I think that's been something that's been very good for the story and why it feels so fresh. And like, I'm not in those rooms when y'all have those conversations, but that would be my suspicion and my like totally unknowledgeable two cents. But
I feel like I'm not particularly a horror person myself. I will watch some horror movies with varying degrees of like fear or reluctance. Sometimes no fear or reluctance. But like, I feel like this world is so like thematically driven that all of the horror and the beauty and the quirks kind of all come from the same place. So my experience of recording it is like, there's one episode, and I think this was in season two, the episode where Dot and Lily go into what we figure out is Wes's house. And all the pictures are facing backwards. Yeah. And that was the moment I remember, like, in the read-through, getting goosebumps and being like, oh, that's so creepy. And that was great. But I feel like it's been much more of, like themes and ideas sounds way too cold. I feel like this is really a story with, like, warmth and humanity at the heart of it. And sometimes that manifests itself in these supernatural ways. And sometimes those supernatural ways are scary, but also sometimes they're amazing.
Yeah, when I actually first heard the show, I think described, and then later reading it, doing it, I absolutely thought about Twin Peaks in relation to the show. And I know that's not one of the specific reference points in creating the show, but it is that, and it's so not that at the same time. It's a show that seems like it wants to live in the place of horror just as much as it wants to live in the place of community, and neither really overtakes the other. And as Marcia mentioned, there's an interplay between the two. But the show, it's drawing upon lots of influences, whether consciously or unconsciously, whether it's world building like Parks and Rec or The Simpsons, where you have all these various denizens of the town. And all of their quirks, same thing with Twin Peaks. And it's also borrowing on, let's say, the horror or the strangeness or the tension of something like Twin Peaks or, but even the stuff as far as like In the Mouth of Madness or Event Horizon, things that are just absolutely gobsmacking, terrifying. And I think to underline what Marcia said, though, at the end of the day, it still ends up being a show with an emotional center. And that's why all of its present is to serve that. And so I think that's a way that it subverts a lot of those tropes.
Yeah, I think one thing that helps a lot is I don't think the like monster, for lack of a better term in this sense, is meant to be feared and hated and othered. You know, it's very much a story about understanding and trying to understand the things that upset us. Whereas like, I feel like a lot of horror movies like, oh, you like establish that the thing is scary and we don't like it. And like, maybe we're trying to understand it, but it's like with the intention of like destroying it or defeating it. And the show never goes there. Like there's like Josh was saying, and like Marcia was saying, like there are those themes of like, it's about community and it's about these people and it's about these relationships before it's about being afraid or unsettled.
I think a great example actually of that playing out in action is the episode where Rudy dies. Because that's an episode that would have gone very differently in a lot of other shows, where someone all season has been building up this great idea they have. They finally figured out how to defeat the big bad, and we get them cornered. Everything's right. And even if something goes wrong with the plan, still the emotion and violence of it works, and that's how you defeat the problem. And I think Unwell has been very clear from day one that that will never be the solution. It can't be the solution. So that's a big subversion right there.
The Fable and Folly Network, where fiction producers flourish.
Congratulations. You've reached the Amelia Project. A new life awaits. If you're not serious about this, hang up. If you continue, there's no way back. Leave your message after the beep.
Enter the offices of the Amelia Project and be ready for surprises, twists, and turns. Follow the Amelia team as they help their clients fake their deaths and come back with new identities. Each episode is different. Each client coming to the death faking agency has a unique story to tell. If death and disappearances, comedy and crime, mystery and magic sounds like your cup of cocoa, the Amelia Project is the podcast for you. Search for the Amelia Project wherever you find your podcasts. And remember, leave your message after the beep.